Morning, everyone. Bill. I don't know. Morning, everyone, and welcome to week two of gratitude. Just before we start, today's shiur is dedicated to two special souls whose yahrzeit is both today. One is Leah Chava Bat Chaim, that's Lillian Feinstein, and Rob Pesel Bas Simcha Bas Shmuel Dov. So the learning we do today is in their merit. So just before we go into what we're doing today, let's just review a little bit and recap of what we established so far last week. We began to talk about the concept of gratitude being one of the most important and critical values in the human existence, and the one that's one of the most beneficial ones. And we talked about, and we'll talk about it more in the coming weeks, of the benefits that it brings and the happiness that it brings and the sense of fulfillment and so on. So last week we started to develop the concept of gratitude, and essentially we established a few different ideas. The first one was that gratitude is not a response to something that happens that's very good or obviously good, but gratitude is a constant mindset. It's a constant state of consciousness that we become people who have a mindset of gratitude. And we talk about gratitude on all levels, whether it's in thought, speech, or action, or between us and God, us and other people, us and ourselves. It's about feeling grateful for the blessings that we have within ourselves. And in fact, all those things are connected, as we'll see today. And that's really what we're going to develop. And the second thing we developed was that gratitude is not a noun, but it's a verb. In other words, it's something that we have to work on. It's something we have to actually put in strategies to develop and to nurture and to access and to really work on it, that we're actually able to create a mindset and an attitude of gratitude. In other words, what that means is to build within our mind a sort of consciousness where we become mindful and we become grateful for all of those things that happen within our lives that are not amazingly good, they're not obviously good, but those small blessings, those small things, the things that go unnoticed, that upon reflection we understand their depth or we understand their significance and we become grateful for them. That's really what a life of gratitude is all about. And really, that's what we're going to be spending the series about. This series is really about trying to look at the strategies to develop that attitude of gratitude, and how we get there. Now, just before we continue on to what I wanted to cover today, I just want to pick up from something that last week and just show you the power of gratitude and the damage when one doesn't have gratitude. I shared with you a thought last week, and just to recap for those who weren't here, that gratitude was so important that Moses, when he took the Jewish people out of Egypt, and he was coordinating God's mission of the 10 plagues, and God wanted to turn the water of the Nile into blood after the river had been smitten with a staff. And God told Moses that although he was the leader and the one in charge, he wasn't to be the one that should smite the river. And his brother Aaron had to do it instead. And I shared with you last week an amazing idea, and that is that the reason for that is because when Moses was a baby, he was protected by the waters of the Nile, right? He had been placed as a baby in a basket in the waters of the Nile and protected for a short while by the waters of the Nile. Therefore, it would be a lack of gratitude for him to smite the river, even though it was necessary and it needed to happen and God wanted to punish the Egyptians. But nevertheless, that would have been ungrateful on his part. Now, of course, the river has no feelings, but that's the idea of him living as a person with a state of consciousness of gratitude, and therefore he wasn't allowed to smite the river. And the interesting thing is that was true with the first plague and the second, which also involved smiting the river, and a similar concept with the third to do with the earth, as I shared with you last week. And I saw a thought that explains why it is that God structured the plagues in such a way where Dafka, the first three plagues had to do with Moses not being able to do it because he had to show gratitude. I mean, why couldn't God change around the order so at least Moses would kick it off, powerful way, and then later on he can delegate to somewhere else. But why was it that specifically the first three plagues were one that came together with this lesson that Moses had to demonstrate gratitude and be grateful for the waters of the Nile that protected him as a baby? And I saw one of the commentaries explain, and I don't remember where I saw it, but it was a beautiful idea. It was to demonstrate that the very essence of the exile, the slavery of Egypt, which was the purpose of the 10 plagues to rectify that process, came about because of lack of gratitude. The whole suffering of Egypt came about because of lack of gratitude. Why? Because if we know the story, the Jews landed up in Egypt because there was a famine, and Joseph had been sold into slavery, and he was in Egypt. He became the viceroy of Egypt. He was very, very powerful. He was very, very beneficial to his family and to Pharaoh and the Egyptians. And for a long period of time, he had actually built up the economy and the infrastructure of Egypt by coordinating it and leading the country in an amazing way. And when the Jews first got there, meaning Jews, 70 people, Jacob and his family got there, they were treated very, very well by Pharaoh. They were taken very well care of. And they prospered in the land of Egypt. And suddenly, at the very beginning of the book of Exodus, there's a verse that says, Vayakam melech chadash, and a new Pharaoh, a new king, came about, was appointed, Asher lo yada et Yosef, that did not know Joseph. And there are two opinions about what that verse means. One opinion says that it was really a new Pharaoh. Now, the old Pharaoh had died, and there was a new Pharaoh. Another opinion says, no, it wasn't actually a new Pharaoh. It was the old Pharaoh. But he didn't know Joseph means he chose not to know Joseph. He decided to ignore all that Joseph had accomplished. And suddenly, the wheels turn, and he turns to his advisors, and he says, look, the Jews are getting too powerful. It's time to put them in their place. And he sets into place a system of slavery. And that's where the beginning of the exile and the persecution and the suffering begins. And of course, the whole thing is bizarre, because either way, whether it was a new Joseph or a new Pharaoh or an old Pharaoh, Joseph was pretty famous. Even if it was a new king, I mean, he wasn't an ignorant king. He wasn't a guy that was a total idiot, didn't know about the history of Egypt. Joseph had made a tremendous impact on the Egyptian infrastructure, and particularly if it was the same Pharaoh. What was the essence of what was going on? It was lack of gratitude. Here we have Joseph, who had built up and had been so beneficial for the whole infrastructure and the whole economy and the whole structure of Egypt. And suddenly, when it wasn't convenient anymore, no one knows who he is. No one appreciates it. No one remembers what he contributed. No one cares what he contributed. And we're now into self-interest, and the Jews are posing a little bit of a threat. Let's put them in their place. So the very story of the suffering and the slavery of Egypt came about, its basis, its foundation, was lack of gratitude. And therefore God says, let's demonstrate that when we actually punish the Egyptians by bringing about the 10 plagues, I want the first three plagues to be structured in such a way where Moses demonstrates this concept of gratitude by specifically showing that he will not do what the Egyptians did. Pharaoh turned his back on Joseph, but Moses will eternally show gratitude even for the waters of the river that protected him when he was a baby, and he will not smite the river. His brother will have to do it instead. Just an interesting thought how the whole thing was surrounded around the concept of gratitude. Okay. So, before we actually start to go into, in greater detail, the strategies that are so necessary, and we'll do that over a few weeks because there are many, to achieve a life of gratitude and to nurture the concept of gratitude, let's develop and explore the concept of gratitude a little bit in greater detail, a little bit further than we did till now. The first question I want to begin with is this. If gratitude is such an important thing, if having a consciousness of gratitude is so critical, of being mindful of the blessings and the good things that we have in life is so important and so essential to the way we live, the question is, why is it so hard? Why is it such a difficult thing? Why do we find that so many people and so many of us seem to slip so easily into focusing on the negative, right? Why is it so easy to slip into a state of being where instead of being grateful, we become dissatisfied? Right? Why are we so quick to focus on the negative rather than the positive? Why is it that when we see that famous analogy where we see that clean piece of cardboard, we focus on the black dot rather than focusing on the rest of it? Why do we do that? Why is it? It needs to be understood, because in order to nurture a consciousness of gratitude, we need to understand what the problem is. We need to understand what we need to do in order to achieve that. So we need to understand what's stopping us from doing that. What is it that brings us so often during the day to focus and to kvetch about all the problems that we have, and we do have them, as we spoke about last week, rather than to highlight and to strengthen the positive and to be grateful for those wonderful things that we receive? And I think the reason is as follows. And let's develop it a little bit, because just bear with me for a few minutes, but I think it's an important idea to explore. Wendy Mogel, who's the author of a book called The Blessing of the Skin, points out, she says one line, which is very interesting, and she says, she claims that we are not born instinctively with a trait of gratitude. Now let's develop this. And why is that? What does that mean that we're not born instinctively with a trait of gratitude? And I think that's true, and it's true for the following reasons. First of all, I think children, when they're born, they do naturally have, most children have a natural, healthy level of optimism. Now, optimism is critical to develop gratitude, but optimism isn't gratitude. Optimism is a tool which we use for gratitude, but it's different. And it's very easy for the optimism to disappear and to be replaced by negativity rather than gratitude. Now, some of you might have read, one of my recent weekly emails, I retold a fascinating thing. For me, it was an amazing moment, so I'll just retell it. Where just to see how children look at the world. I was at a school a number of weeks ago, my daughter's school, she's almost seven, and I have a system where the infants run the assembly every few weeks, another class runs the assembly, and they invite the parents to that particular class, so I went, like a good father, try to be, my wife slept me along, no, I'm just kidding. And to watch it perform, they were putting on a little skit. And before they performed, so the principal of Kesser Torah, Rabbi Gloga, he got up and he was sort of telling the little kiddies a Dvar Torah of the week. But he was trying to do it in a way where it was kid-friendly, like it's talking about year one, year two. And he pulled out a jar, a big jar that was half full with sort of blue water, so it was very easy to see. And he was trying to show the children this idea that, you can look at things two ways, half full, half empty, right? And listen to this, just the most amazing moment. He said to the kids, and then he connected it to the parasha in a very clever way, I have to say. So he said to the kids, so who thinks this jar is half empty? And not one hand went up. And then he said, so who thinks the jar is half full? And every hand went up. Right? It was just such an enlightening moment. I thought to myself, when does this get lost? What happens? What age? Like, when does, what age do we does suddenly switch off? Yes?
If it would have been clear water, I wonder if the answer would have been the same.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. I don't think so profoundly like that. I didn't think so deeply. But it was an amazing thing. Right? I think the non-clear water, just to make it visible, but yeah, you're right. Well, okay, I hear what you're saying. That's very good. But we need to understand the following. That when we're born, we are born with natural optimism, but we're also born with lots of other things. And God implanted into the human being, into a child particularly, certain personality traits that are, on the one hand, are critical for human function and human existence. On the other hand, they're very dangerous. What are they? What did God implant into the Jewish, into the human design? The first thing that he implanted into the human design is the concept of desire, the idea to want things. Right? And the little children, when as they start to develop, just grab anything in sight and then put it in their mouth, right? Everything inside they grab. There's an unbelievable, almost unsatiable need to want. And that's why the Talmud tells us that Mish Yeshla Manah, someone who has 100 instinctively wants 200. If you have 200, you want 400. It's never enough. You always want more. Right? So there's this concept, there's this need that a human being is born with to want. The second thing that we're born with is a sense of competition. We do. As we grow up, we have this thing, and it's not always bad, by the way, to compete with others, to benchmark ourselves against others, to use others as a sort of a... And we compete and become competitive. Almost becomes a benchmark of success sometimes, to win. And the third thing that we're implanted with is an incredible need to control. We've talked about this before, but it's very relevant to this discussion. To control our lives and to be independent. As babies grow up, what do they tell you they want to do? Everything myself. They want to do themselves. They don't want you to help them. There's this incredible pursuit of independence. And part of that pursuit of independence is to be in control. Now, the amazing thing with all these traits is that they're very dangerous, but they're also very necessary. And they're not necessarily bad. It's similar to what I've shared with you in the past, and you know, until Rosh Hashanah, between Pesach and Rosh Hashanah, there's the custom to study the passages of the Mishnah from the Ethics of the Fathers. And there's that one beautiful passage we mentioned a number of times, where the Ethics of the Fathers teaches us that there are three things, jealousy, lust, and pursuit of glory, that can destroy the human being. And the language that it uses is, it will take the human being out of this world. Right? And the great philosopher, the Maharal of Prague, says that jealousy, lust, and pursuit of glory are the three most critical and necessary ingredients of human function. It just depends how you use them. A person wakes up in the morning and doesn't want anything, stays in bed. Why should you get out of bed if you don't want anything? The person who has no concept of jealousy, no concept of competition, has no aspiration, doesn't know anything to strive for. And pursuit of glory can be a terrible thing, but pursuit of glory can also be the pursuit of a healthy self. Come in, just bring it back. A healthy sense of purpose, a healthy sense of identity. Right? So these traits are not bad. A child is born with an incredible need to want. That's fine, that's a great thing to do. Even healthy competition. The need to control is also a good thing, but all depends how these things are channeled. And the problem goes like this. Another thing that a child is born with is a tremendous ego. Children are naturally very, very self-centered, for a very good reason, by the way. The reason that children are self-centered is because God designed a human being that when we grow in the very beginning, we need to discover ourselves, and we nurture ourselves, and we discover who we are. And therefore, there's a tremendous... That's why little children don't have relationships. Relationships are formed later. Why? Because before you can form a relationship, you need to discover yourself. But in the process of discovering yourself, the focus is on yourself. Now, the problem is that sometimes we don't grow out of it properly. So these traits, these personalities, the concept of wanting, of needing, the concept of controlling, the concept of competing, these ideas are critical things, but when they come in the context of ego and they come in the context of self-centeredness, they become very dangerous and very destructive and very negative. And what happens is as follows. When these traits remain with the human being, but in a self-centered sort of way, then what they degenerate into, what they develop into is this. It develops, first of all, into a tremendous sense of entitlement, which is the exact opposite of gratitude. Because we want, and because we're born with a need to want, and I need, it's mine, it's my need, I want something I need to have, and I was born with it, and that's the drive that I have. Suddenly, not only do I want it, but I'm entitled to it. And I'm entitled to more. And what I have now is not enough. And I want more, and I'm entitled to more. So there's this tremendous sense of entitlement. And once I'm entitled to something and I don't get it, so obviously the optimism disappears and the negativity overtakes. The same thing with control. people fight for independence, fight for control, because there's this, you know, independence is a wonderful thing. And the need to work and be responsible and not to be a taker, not to be dependent on other people, all wonderful things. It depends where it's coming from. If it's coming from arrogance, it's a terrible thing. Because the focus is always that I can never ever be dependent on anyone or anything else. If I'm never dependent or I never need anyone else, and I always have to control everything, and I always have to be the one in control, and I have to make things happen, and what happens in my life has to be my doing and my control and my accomplishments and my success, then of course we can't have gratitude. Of course we don't have gratitude. It's hard to show gratitude then. Because gratitude, for some people, real gratitude, is almost a concession. It's almost seen by some people as a weakness. Subconsciously, no one will admit it, but it's a subconscious weakness. The more grateful I am to other people, for example, it means the more I need them. The more grateful I am to what others have given me, or even what God has given me, means the less I'm in control. Now, that's where the problem is. You see, the being in control is a good thing, if we understand what control really is. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Independence is a good thing. Wanting is a good thing. Healthy competition is a good thing. But when it comes in the context of the ego which we're born with, the self-centeredness which we sometimes find it difficult to get rid of and to mature out of, then they all sort of become negative traits in a very egocentric and self-centered way, and they stand in the way of true gratitude. Okay? Now let's understand this. You see, let's understand it from a Jewish perspective. Because, and we've talked about this many times, but the 101, right? The 101 of Jewish thought, the absolute foundation of Jewish thought, is that everything is from God. In fact, we don't control anything. We've talked about this hundreds of times. Right? If we're talking about something from a Jewish perspective, that's the foundation. The foundation is that everything comes from God. And we are totally dependent on this higher reality. And it's in a, and this dependence on God is a healthy dependence, a liberating dependence, not an unhealthy dependence. There's healthy dependence and unhealthy dependence. Being dependent on God, being part of a greater reality, doesn't diminish from our greatness. On the contrary, when we submit to a higher reality, when we submit to an infinite God, our opportunities are greater. Our depth is greater. Our partnership with God is greater. Our abilities are much greater. It's a big mistake, people, that people who have this need to control limit themselves because we're just small people. When we understand that God has given us the power to control, but a much greater and deeper control, the control that He gave us when we were born is to control ourselves. Is to control our responses, is to control our emotions, to control our instincts, to put limitations on our greed, on our lust, to make moral choices. That's the control we have. That's a greater control. As the ethics of the Father says, he who is strong, who is a strong person, he who overcomes his inclination, right? So when we become, when we acknowledge, and we understand that everything comes from a higher reality, that everything that we have in life ultimately comes from a higher source. We didn't create this ourselves. And we understand that it doesn't take away from the greatness and the depth of us being responsible and successful and hardworking and creative people, because that in itself is God-given and God-demanded. God wants us to be creative. He wants us to use our talents. He wants us to make choices. He wants us to plan the day. He wants us to achieve, but to understand that the ability to achieve comes from Him. And that everything we have comes from Him, sometimes directly, sometimes through other people, sometimes through other things. Which is why all the levels of gratitude are all connected. As I mentioned last week from the famous Sefer HaChinuch, that honoring parents is a form of gratitude, and it's connected with gratitude to God, because when I get something from you and I'm grateful, it's because God allowed me to have that blessing, and He allowed you to be the emissary, to be the messenger, and therefore I'm grateful to you. It's part of one level of gratitude. It's part of one concept, right? You know, Rabbi Sachs in an article says a beautiful thing. You know, the insurance companies have this saying, right? That they insure you for everything except for an act of God. You ever heard that concept? Yeah, it's an insurance policy if you didn't realize. It's in the fine print, right? So what's an act of God? So, you know, if there's a story, if something happens, if there's, you know, they'll insure me. But if there's a sudden act of God, like there's a sudden unexpected lightning or storm or flood and the building falls down, I'm not insured for that. He says, isn't that a terrible thing? That when something really, really bad happens, suddenly it's an act of God. The fact that I get up in the morning, I have shoes to wear, that's not an act of God. That's just, you know, obviously, I mean, that's what happens every morning. Right? The thing that we call an act of God is a disastrous, out of this world, unexpected occurrence. And the fact that the sun rose this morning, that's not an act of God. Nachmanides says this, you know, Nachmanides says, we talk about in Jewish literature, there's the distinction between miracles and natural events. And he says, what's the difference between a miracle and a natural event? There is no difference. The one happens every day and the one only happens once in a while. Right? You know, the splitting of the Red Sea was an unbelievable and miraculous event. What, the sun rising every day is less miraculous? It's the same thing. Right? But the one happens every day, so we take it for granted. Gratitude means that although we have this need that we're born with to want and to be in control, but the control doesn't mean that we control ourselves. The control doesn't mean that we're not dependent on a higher reality. It doesn't mean that everything comes from a higher reality. You know, the story of Rabbi Sachs reminds me of that famous little story of the guy that was, I'm sure some of you know this, the guy was driving around the city and he really needed a parking spot because he was late for an appointment. And he's driving around the block and around and just can't find it. He's late and he's stressing out. But suddenly out of desperation, you know, that's what we do. We're desperate. We turn to God. So out of desperation, he looks up. He says, God, I promise you, if I find the parking spot, I'll be really, really a good person. And he goes round and round and still not working. He says, God, I promise you, I don't know what. I'll light Shabbos candle. I'll put up a mezuzah. I'll give charity. I'll learn Torah. I'll do whatever you want. And he makes all these promises. And in the middle of making the promises are increasing, where suddenly this unexpected, unbelievable, beautiful parking spot appears, and he turns to God and he says, it's okay, God, I found one. It kind of sums up the problem, right? So that's the first premise, the first foundation, the first 101 of Yiddishkeit is that nothing comes from ourselves. Everything is a gift. And it doesn't diminish us, it increases us. That submission, that dependence makes us greater people, not smaller people. And the second foundation, the second absolute axiom of Jewish thought is that we don't have entitlement. Because the gifts that we were given for a purpose. And that everything that we have in this life is not just to party, it's actually, of course, it's to enjoy, because we're supposed to enjoy God's world. But we're here for a reason. And we're here to achieve something, we're here to fulfill something. Every person has there's a general purpose and there's a specific purpose. And we have our general journey, and we each have a purpose to fulfill on this planet in the short time that we're here. And the things that we get are the tools that God gives us to use. And therefore, wanting, this thing that we're born with to want, is fantastic, it's critical. Because if we didn't want, we wouldn't have. If we wouldn't want, we wouldn't achieve, and we wouldn't get the tools that we need to achieve a purpose. But when that sense of want, that sense of desire is in context, it's not in the context of entitlement, but it's in the context of a sense of purpose, then it's channeled properly. It's not an infinite, unsatiable greed that I want everything that I set my eyes on. I want things because they're good for me. I want things that I can achieve. I want things in a way where I don't damage or undermine anyone else. I'm not jealous of other people. I want because I want to fulfill the purpose, and therefore it's within a purposeful context. Right? And therefore, I want things because I need to achieve. I want things because I want to live a life of purpose, and therefore I don't take it for granted. I don't have a sense of entitlement. I don't have a sense of... I don't take things for granted. And I want... I do want, but also have a sense of purpose. And therefore I start to acknowledge, I start to understand that the things I have are gifts given to me by a higher reality to use for a life of purposefulness. So I thought that was important to sort of cover, because we naturally don't have this sense of gratitude. Because when we're born, our sense of optimism is overrun and overtaken by other very critical traits, like that sense of needing and that sense of control and all those other, sense of jealousy, but which could be good jealousy. But what happens is that they get taken over, and in the context of self-centeredness, they derail our ability to be grateful, and we become negative. And what we need to do is, we need to build into our consciousness to reverse it, to rediscover that old childlike optimism, so we understand the positive, we highlight the positive, we look for the positive, and we don't take things for granted, and we acknowledge and we realize the gifts that we truly have. So how do we do it? So step one is, let me share with you this idea. The sages of the Talmud instituted many, many things to actively work hard to build a mindset of gratitude. Right? One of the things they did, there's the concept in Jewish practice of making a bracha, the idea of a blessing. Right? First of all, the whole idea of a blessing, very, very much, is to build a focus and to build a consciousness of gratitude. Acknowledging of where our gifts come from. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the wording of every blessing is a strange wording. You say, Baruch Atah Hashem, which if you look in most English prayer books, is translated as, Blessed are you, God, right? So we bless God. I don't know if you realize this, but God doesn't actually need our blessings, right? So what does it mean we bless God? So there are many, many interpretations, but one of the more famous ones is that actually it's mistranslated. Baruch Atah Hashem does not mean, Blessed are you, God. Baruch doesn't mean blessed. Baruch means the source of blessing. And when we say a blessing, the first three words we actually say is, Baruch Atah Hashem, you God is the source of blessing. You are the source of blessing. And then we specify the blessing that we talk about. Right? So the whole concept of making a bracha before wine, a bracha on whatever we make a bracha on, right? The concept of a blessing, among many, many, many other strategies, but this is one of the concepts, that the concept of a bracha is this idea, to constantly develop a focus that what we have is a gift. And it's coming from a higher source, the source of blessing. Right? Now, in proper Jewish practice, there's a concept that you're actually supposed to make 100 blessings a day. Right? Now, how do we get to 100 blessings a day? So, because there's many, many, many different types of blessings that we make throughout the day. There's daily prayers. So the prayers contain many, many, many blessings. There's blessings on food, right? That's a different type of blessing, which also, of course, is the idea of thanking God for the food that we have. Almost like the Talmud says, making a bracha before we eat. Like, you make a bracha before the challah, before the wine, or before we eat something. It's almost like asking permission, so to speak, to partake of God's will. It's an acknowledgement that I'm not entitled to this. I don't take this for granted. It's not mine. It's given to me, right? Yes, I worked for it, and that's what I'm supposed to do. Work for it means I created a space, I've created a vehicle for God to give me the blessing, and that's what God wants us to do. He wants us to create a channel for Him to send His blessing, so to speak. But that's what it is. There's also brachas that we make before we do a mitzvah. Take a heavy example, like before you light Shabbos candles on Friday night, you make a bracha. Why do you need to make a bracha before you do a mitzvah? Just do the mitzvah. The mitzvah is a good thing. Why do we need to make a bracha? And part of the reason is it's also a concept of gratitude. We're thanking God for the opportunity to do good things. To be in the position to be able to perform and do a good thing, right? So there's all kinds of brachas, but the idea of 100 blessings seems excessive. And the concept is very simple, as we said before. We don't have a natural sense of gratitude. We tend instinctively to focus on the negative. We tend instinctively to focus on what we don't have a lot of times. We tend to miss and forget and to ignore the simple things in life which could be amazing blessings, but we just forget about them. And therefore the rabbi says, you should make 100 blessings a day, because if you make 100 blessings a day, throughout the day, you'll often stop and have that consciousness. Okay, maybe we don't get the 100, at least some, but the idea is to constantly sort of have that acknowledgement that what we have is a gift, and it's a gift coming from a higher source. It's an interesting thing. when the halachic sources go through the calculation of how we get to 100 brachas each day, there's a famous problem. The problem is that the davening on Shabbat is actually shorter. It looks longer, but it's actually shorter in terms of how many blessings that we make. Because on the daily prayers, there's the concept of the Amidah. The Amidah has 19 blessings. The Amidah on Shabbat only has 7 blessings. Right? So there's an idea that on Shabbat, one should have like extra fruit or smell extra spices, right? In other words, look for opportunities to make blessings. It's the idea that once a week, it's not even natural thing. Once a week, we actually put extra effort to go look for opportunities to be grateful and to thank God for the good things that we have. It's the idea of looking for opportunities to make a blessing, right? Interesting idea. But one of the most powerful sets of blessings, if you ever get a chance, look in a prayer book in the morning, is something we call Birchot HaShachar. It's the morning blessings. Beginning of a prayer book, you'll see the morning blessings. And they're very powerful because it goes down to the essence of what a life of gratitude is. The morning blessings, the rabbis instituted quite a long list of blessings that we say every morning that essentially thank God for the things that all of us take for granted. We're all going to go to sleep tonight and we're all going to expect, myself included, everyone, right? We're going to expect to get up in the morning, to walk, to talk, to have clothes to put on that we left somewhere in the room the night before or in the cupboard, right? We expect these things. So the sage and the wisdom says no. Living a life of gratitude means you cannot expect anything. You can ask, we are commanded to pray to God to fulfill our needs. That doesn't mean that we take it for granted. So we have a look at those blessings in the morning, you'll see the most simple things. We thank God for getting up, for being able to actually stand straight. Right? Truth is, if we look around the world, unfortunately, not everyone can do that. So it's a gift. We thank God for being able to do that. We thank God for being able to walk. We thank God for shoes. You know, there's a special blessing that we thank God for the ability to have shoes to wear. And that's another discussion, by the way, because the Talmud says that apart from all the clothing, shoes are very important. But we'll talk about that a different time. We thank God for being able to see. Able to see. We expect to wake up tomorrow morning to see, but we have to understand that it's a gift. Right? And one of the most amazing things is, if you have a look at a list of blessings, there's one that comes right in the beginning that seems out of context. And the one that's in the beginning, the first one, before we thank God for walking, seeing, getting up, not being tired, the ability to sleep, etc., all these things, all these simple things in life, there's one that goes like this. We thank God for giving the rooster the wisdom for telling the difference between night and day. Now, to most of us, that's like esoteric stuff, because I don't think anyone goes to sleep with a rooster next to their bed anymore to wake them up. We now have digital alarm clocks instead, right? But we know that there were times when people would get up with a rooster. But the wording of the blessing is very strange. We ask God for giving the rooster the wisdom, right, to tell the difference between yom v'layla, night and day. Now, there are things in this world that require an amazing amount of wisdom, but telling the difference between night and day isn't one of them. It's not a hard thing to tell, right? One's dark, one's light. So what's this wisdom that we're thanking God for, the gift that He gave the rooster, the wisdom to tell the difference between day and night? And I once heard, in fact, I heard this thought from, many of you remember him, he used to live here, David Shaw, a beautiful thought that he said over from someone, I don't remember from whom. And he said the following idea, he said that no, if you know about, which we don't know today because we don't live on farms, but if you know about when the rooster crows, the rooster does not crow when the night is ended, you know that? The rooster crows like an hour before it gets light. The rooster crows when it's dark. It's absolutely dark. Long before sunset, the rooster is crowing. So we say, we thank God, that's the wisdom. And I think I'm going to extend the thought just a little bit. That night represents, darkness represents the negative things which exist. And and every person's life has some negativity. Daytime represents light, represents those good things. The blessings, the obvious blessings, the things that we can enjoy, the things we appreciate, the things we can feel that are really tangibly good. And often we just cannot see any good when we're focusing on the black, we're focusing on the dark. But before we make these blessings, before, and that gives it a context and explains why that blessing is there. Before we make the blessings to thank God for walking, for talking, for seeing, for getting up in the morning, in other words, before we make the blessings that will give us the consciousness that we will learn throughout the day to highlight our blessings, we'll learn throughout the day to understand that we're all blessed with beautifully good things, even when they're negative things. Before we can make those blessings, we remember the wisdom that the rooster has. That the rooster has, that even when it's night, it's dark, the rooster already sees the day. The rooster is able to highlight the good. The rooster is able to highlight the blessing. It's not the blessing is not obvious yet, because it's dark. But the rooster is able to crow because the rooster has the wisdom to differentiate and to say, yes, it is dark, and there are darknesses and there are challenges, but there's also a lot of blessing. And therefore I can highlight that and I can already crow. And that becomes a critical introduction to all those other blessings, because as we said last week, there are challenges. There is darkness. We shouldn't kid ourselves. We're not in denial. Everyone has the little peckle. But living a life of gratitude means to learn to focus on the daytime. So we make that blessing first, that the rooster has that wisdom. Yeah.
Isn't it more in the wisdom?
Okay, so the question is why bina? But it's emunah, which comes from a level of thought. You have to think about it. Is it faith or is it understanding? But it is faith, but it's faith that also comes from an understanding. I think that's the idea. You know, there's blessings that we make, for example, again, this idea of not taking things for granted, right? There's a special blessing that people make. In fact, it's based on a sacrifice that used to be brought in temple times, which was called the Korban Todah, the sacrifice of thanksgiving. That if someone went across the sea, or traveled through a desert, which was potentially dangerous, or was unwell and became healthy, or was incarcerated by an oppressive regime and then was released. Special blessing. Everything has blessings, so we don't take things for granted. But perhaps the most powerful lesson of gratitude in terms of blessing is actually not a blessing, but it's a sentence, which is the very, very first sentence of the prayer book. And we've talked about this before, but it's a sentence called Modeh Ani. Right? Because the morning blessings, thank God for clothing, thank God for walking, thank God for seeing. Modeh Ani does something even deeper. Modeh Ani, just to I should have put it on the handout actually, but it's at the beginning of any prayer book, and it's a little sentence that is supposed to be said when we wake up in the morning, that we thank God, not for anything, we thank God for being alive. Could we take that for granted too? We thank God for returning our soul, based on the concept, the Talmudic idea that when we go to sleep, a lot of our soul leaves our body, and the sort of sleep is almost a taste of death, it says, and the soul ascends and refreshes itself. And when we wake up in the morning, God has to give us our soul back, refreshed. So wake up in the morning, we say Modeh Ani, we start the day with gratitude. We start the day with thank you, that's what we do. Wake up in the morning, we say, it's going to be a day of thank you. It's going to be a day where I'm just happy to be alive. I'm grateful for getting up. Number one, that's the first blessing of the day. The first blessing of the day is actually opening up our eyes. It's actually being awake. But you know what's fascinating? What's the expression that we use? Modeh Ani. Right? Say, Modeh Ani lefanecha. I thank you, God, for returning my soul. The term that we use is modeh, right? Same Hebrew word as todah. Now, even in modern Hebrew, when you say thank you, the word is todah, right? Todah rabah, thank you very much. The word todah in Hebrew, or modeh, same word, has actually two meanings. It means thank you, but it also means to acknowledge. To agree, to acknowledge. Right? Like if we're having a disagreement, for example, just to understand the context of this word, and I decide to agree with you on one point, I would say, well, on this point, ani modeh. On this point, I agree. Right? So agreeing or acknowledging that you're right is the same word as saying thank you. Why is that? Because it goes to the heart of what we've been discussing. True gratitude is not just to say thank you for the obvious good things. True gratitude is not to feel grateful if you win lotto. That's not being grateful. Or someone gives you an amazing gift, or someone saves your life. True gratefulness is to acknowledge that everything is a gift. So when we wake up in the morning, and we wake up expecting to wake up, and we put on our shoes and we get dressed expecting to have clothes, expecting to have a roof over our heads, expecting to have breakfast on the table, we say, modeh. We start the day, the first word we say in the day is modeh. Because we pledge, so to speak, that we're going to try and live a day of gratitude. What does it mean to live a day of gratitude? It means we're going to live a day where we're going to acknowledge that nothing is taken for granted. We're going to acknowledge that everything is a gift. We're going to acknowledge that there are blessings. We're going to acknowledge that I have a lot of good things for which I have to be grateful for. We're going to acknowledge that God has given us all these gifts. That's a different word than thank you. And when I acknowledge it, then I can say thank you. And if I just finish the thought, just to, one more thing. I don't know if you know this, but the Hebrew word for Jew is exactly the same word, Yehudi. Do you know that? Right? Taken from the word Yehuda, actually, because there's a historic reason why we called Yehudim, is because many of us come from the tribe of Yehuda. Because after the destruction of the second temple, first temple actually, the 10 tribes were lost, and the remaining two tribes was Yehuda and Binyamin. But it became traditionally for all Jews to be called Yehudim, right? Why? Because it goes back to what I said before, it's the essence of being Jewish. The essence of Jewish teaching is to acknowledge our connection to God. It's to acknowledge our dependence on God. It's to acknowledge that everything we have, our whole life, is controlled, not in a negative sense, but controlled in a beautiful sense, and led by a higher authority. That acknowledgement. So the concept, the essence of Jewishness really, is very much tied in with the whole concept of gratitude, because modeh, to thank, to acknowledge, and Jewishness, the Jewish thinking, it's all connected to the same idea. Yeah.
My question was that if you're doing 100 brachas a day, how do you make each one meaningful and heartfelt rather than just a rote activity?
Okay, it's a very, very, very good question.
If something happens that really hits you, like a beautiful sunset, or you see something lovely in a child, you instantly go to, oh, this is just wonderful, how amazing. But you haven't been instructed to do it, and you're not doing it as a routine activity. It's sort of overwhelming in that moment.
100% right. So some of the things we're going to develop over the next week is this. Gratitude is a combination of action and intent, right? As many things are. And you're 100% right. It's up to us, really, how to use those blessings. In other words, what the sage did for us is they gave us a formula. See, the idea is that the simple lunch that we sit down to eat should become to us as amazing as the beautiful sunset, right? We should be as excited about it as the amazing sunset. Now, that's difficult. The tool given to us to do that is the blessing. How we're going to use it is up to us. It's a choice, right? We can't be spoon-fed. In other words, we can just rattle off the blessing, as sometimes we do, unfortunately, and then it's at least we've done it, but it doesn't have that same meaning. Or we can train ourselves that we make blessings to stop and think for a moment and actually understand what it is. You're right. But so the blessing is only half the picture. It's only there as a tool to do it. How you use the tool is up to you. But what we've started to see, however, you see, what we've started to embark on, and we're going to do a lot more over the next few weeks, and look at lots of different strategies in our life to develop this concept of gratitude. Is that two things. Gratitude needs work. As I said, it's a verb. It needs a lot of effort. But it's also a choice, you see. Gratitude is we choose to be grateful. We all have lots to be grateful for, but we have to choose to be grateful. It's a decision. Now, that note, I want to just end off with a beautiful story, and I am grateful to, where is she, Shelley for... What did you? Oh, there we are. I'm grateful for Shelley for sending me this after last week. And if I just read this to you, I thought it was such a beautiful piece, and I'm reading it to you, just highlights this concept that it's a mindset. Gratefulness is a mindset, and linked in with happiness really becomes a mindset, because the two are linked, as we said last week. And it's really a decision that we make, and it's a choice that we make. We just have to work on it and discover the strategies. And someone wrote, obviously someone who works in a nursing home, an old age home, wrote the following. And I'll read it to you because it's beautiful the way they wrote it. And he or she, I'm not sure, writes the following. A 92-year-old, petite, well-poised, and proud man who is fully dressed each morning by 8 o'clock with his hair fashionably combed and shaved perfectly, even though he's legally blind, moved to a nursing home today. His wife of 70 years recently passed away, making the move necessary. After many hours of waiting patiently in the lobby of the nursing home, he smiled sweetly when he was told that his room was ready. As he maneuvered his walker to the elevator, I provided a visual description of his tiny room, including the sheets that had been hung on his window, the beautiful sheets, whatever. So he said, "I love it," he stated with the enthusiasm of an 8-year-old having just been presented with a new puppy. "Mr. Jones, you haven't even seen the room. Just wait." To which he replied, "That doesn't have anything to do with it. Happiness is something you decide on ahead of time. Whether I like my room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged. It depends how I arrange my mind. I already decided to love it." What? He says, happiness is something you decide on ahead of time. Whether I like my room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged. It's how I arrange my mind. I've already decided to love it. All right, thank you. It's beautiful. And that's really, if I can just end up, that's really the point that we're going to continue to work on. It's how we learn to do that. Because I don't know if he worked hard or he had it naturally, but most of us don't have this naturally, right? And we have to learn to do it. And it's about looking at all the strategies that will help us learn to do that. And that's what we're going to do over the next few weeks in more detail. Have a wonderful week.